Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the months of June and July 2025. I'm your host, Robert, and internet, I would very much like it if you would stop trying to tell me everything about Sydney Sweeney. I prefer to live in ignorance. And with me, I have...
You got any blueberry pop Oreos in here?
No, I did not pick them up from the last time I went shopping, air quotes. What he doesn't know is that I have them hiding in a secret compartment in the closet. But don't tell him that, it's a surprise for later. I mean, what? I didn't say anything.
No, I didn't hear anything. I'm just, you know, Don, someone places.
Hey, you gotta wait for that closet. You know what? I got the chocolate set. I'm not afraid to use them. My blueberry Oreos. Yeah, so as you can tell, we have been left unsupervised for this recording. If you heard the weekly main episode, unfortunately, Alex is laying down sick, so he chose to sit out the monthly broadcast. But he will be back the next time we record, hopefully. Hopefully all is well.
Yes.
So, yeah, this is another one of those years where we kind of have to fold June and July into a single roundup because, well, there was like half a roundup's worth of albums between them. Like, okay, stuff technically came out, but as far as the stuff that, like, we would gladly seek out, or at least is of note, yeah, it kind of had to go into, you know, this whole thing.
Yeah, like, I guess me personally, June was a wasteland. It was like, oh, there's like, it's Slim Pickens. Try on the hand. Well, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't like a super urgent couple of months outside of like the one or two blockbusters that did in fact happen, which, yeah, to be fair, there was technically stuff that happened. So, let's not waste any further time, and we should probably like get into it where, as always, we start off here proper with what exactly came out the past couple of months, taking it week by week, some of the bigger releases, maybe any sort of noteworthy niche stuff. So, yeah, let's start off in June, specifically June 6th. Your big weekly releases that day include the likes of the new Catatonia album, Nightmares as Extensions of the Waking State. There was also the new Turnstile record, Never Enough. From Little Sims, we had Lotus. From the combined efforts of Joey Purp and Thelonious Martin, we had Champagne Seats. Brian Eno and Beatty Wolf had a duology of releases called Luminal and Lateral. We had the debut full-length album from Stranger Things actor Finn Wolfhard with Happy Birthday. From Seth MacFarlane of Family Guy fame, we had Lush Life, The Lost Sinatra Arrangements. From Lil Wayne, we, unfortunately, from the sound of it, had The Carter Six. And last, maybe not entirely least, depending on how you look at it, there was the self-titled debut album from TikTok influencer Addison Rae. Then moving on to the week of Friday, June the 13th, your new albums included the new Buck Cherry release Roar Like Thunder, the newest Fallujah album Xenotaph, from King Gizzard plus or minus a Lizard Wizard, their first release of the year, Phantom Island. Bro, you guys gotta catch up. Boldy James is lapping all over you. From Slick Rick, we had his first new album in like two decades at least with Victory. From Ty Dolla $ign, we had the project Tycoon. Apparently there was a collab project I missed between Juicy J and Logic with Live and In Color. Also, we had a release from JPEG Mafia, this being described as the director's cut of his second studio album, Veteran. From musician Dierks Bentley, we had the album Broken Branches. And unfortunately, there was a new Ian Dior project with Cycles. Then moving on to the week of June 20th, we had the newest album from Cryptopsy with An Insatiable Violence. From the band Hotline TNT, we had their third studio album, Raspberry Moon. From the Australian experimental band Tropical Fuckstorm, we had their newest album, Fairyland Codex. Apparently there was a new project from Kiki Palmer with Just Kiki. From Youngblood, we had the album Idols, and there was a new Benson Boone album, American Hearts. The verbal thrashings that thing was getting. Now, moving on to the final week of June, June 27th, we had the newest Heaven Shall Burn album with Hey Matt. From Merzbow, we had their new album, Sidonis. Pigpen, the hardcore band fronted by actor and chef Matty Matheson, dropped their debut record, Mental Madness. From Kevin Abstract, we had his newest album, Blush. Apparently, there was a new Lizzo mixtape, My Face Hurts from Smiling. From various artists, there was the soundtrack album for the film F1. From Frankie Grande, we had his debut album, Hotel Rock Bottom. That is the half-sibling of Ariana Grande, and technically the evil older brother of Cat Valentine from Victorious, or as he's known in Henry Danger, Frankini. Can you tell I've watched those Quentin Reviews videos? But last but certainly not least, there was the newest studio album from Lord with Virgin. So now let's move into July, starting off with the War Devil's favorite day, July 4th. We had the newest album from the Dropkick Murphys with For the People, and Kesha's newest album, Period. Now let's move on to July 11th. Your new big releases include the latest Born of Osiris record, Through Shadows. There was a new Burna Boy project, No Sign of Weakness. From Open Mike Eagle, his latest solo release on his own, Neighborhood Gods Unlimited. From, oh hey, look at that, Boldy James! And Nicholas Craven with Late to My Own Funeral. There was, unfortunately, a new surprise album from Justin Bieber with Swag. Only really dropped as a response to the first new Clips album in well over a decade and a half with Let God Sort 'Em Out. And there was a new album from the K-pop group Twice with This Is Four. Then July 13th comes around, and that unfortunately gives us the Jack Boys and Travis Scott project, Jack Boys 2, of which I have had the displeasure of hearing that one song. If you've been on TikTok, you know the one. Wobbly wiggly, wobbly wiggly, wobbly wiggly. Is that what qualifies as a fucking hook these days from Travis? Fuck you. Yeah, fuck you and your basic-ass name.
And that's the thing. That hook wasn't even sung by Travis.
I don't give a shit. I'm blaming it on him anyways. Who else would be that stupid to put a... Never mind. Anyway, July 18th, proper. There's the new Abigail Williams album, A Void Within Existence. From Bush, we had the album I Beat Loneliness. From Darren Malakian and Scars on Broadway, their new album Addicted to the Violence. From Zach Farrow, the drummer of Paramore, his solo debut Operator. The debut full-length album from singer Alex Warren with You'll Be Alright Kid. Then moving on to July 21st, we had a short-notice new album from Tyler, the Creator, titled Don't Tap the Glass. Then we move on to July 25th, where the only real albums of note here were the newest Young Boy Never Broke Again album, Massa, and of course, Freddie Gibbs and the Alchemist cooking up a second serving of Alfredo. Get it? It's a pun. Laugh! But now that calendar roundup's in the can, now we have to dive into some of these releases and stuff proper. So, Mark, would you care to tell us about whatever albums you were listening to and anything I might have missed?
June, July, or very I have more albums from July than in June. And okay, I would say it's like telling the albums I do got, it is total of, 15, like four in June, 11 in July, and considering the two from July, I might talk a little bit later, considering, I know, because I'll put, because I'll that'd be a joint review for well, you know, but yeah, I'm gonna first go with the highlight for me, or at least the highlight that I want to talk about already. That is, of course, Freddy Gibbs and the Alchemist, Alfredo 2. Oh, just wow! It's been 5 years since the first one came out. One that I should have done the written review in the first place, because, well, I don't know, but my wife is, and it's been, I was like, at the time that came out, the world wasn't shit, like it is now.
Yeah.
And so let's have, like, all right, we got the first single, which is, you know, 1985, which I explained, like, basically the sequel to 1985, the sequel to the original track off of the first one. And yeah, like, the everything on this was from the, well, I said everything, well, everything from the, on the track review, like, you know, the same one for the beat to the guitar, it sounds killer, and of course, the final start the album. Okay, now, the rest of the album, we got Mar-a-Lago, which it's a highlight too. Like, even though, like, they basically saying, like, you know, comparing the raid to the Orange Guy spot to the FBI, the area raid in that place, like, basically, like, there's some lines, like, that was like, fuck around, throw a grenade, and blow a casket up, just don't gas them up. And I think I heard some samples of Bing Rings from that all-time hood classic, Baby Boy. If you know, you know. And then the next track we got is, no joke, it's called Lemon Pepper Steppers.
Which, nice.
Yes, that was... it sounds like Miss Marvel would eat with some cooker fries and a Sprite. But it took a nice bars to it. So it was like, okay, that sounds nice. And then we have the track Ensalada, which, yes, I know in Spanish that means salad, but in the context of the song, it sounds like Ensalada. Like, Ensalada, or Ensalada, you're going to be a grammar slip about it. Like, basically, the track goes on how you can, on who you can trust in these streets, worry about getting killed still as well. And I just gotta say, Anderson Paak fucking sung the hell out of that hook. Like, you can hear the soul oozing out that track. This is a fucking fire track. And it could have got some stuff as fuck ass nigga, I don't whip across the map to get a nigga whack across a couple of time zones. That would confess the killer. I see dead faces with my eyes closed. Feel like niggas never been met a plug or met your Pablo's. Open niggas chains on the gram. Can't call up a nigga's name. It's a lot of PC looks like niggas fight performance to me. Far enough, they got to murder me. And yeah, you knew this was coming. You sort of knew this was coming if you follow, you know, Freddie Gibbs a lot. Yeah, he throwing shots at a lot of people. One of them being, the Butcher. That was a shot towards him. And of course he did again. And the next track, Empanadas, which the lyrics as in, spent in Miami, his boys jumped me, he played it safe. Bitch in Buffalo get the same thing, they throw in place. Left the wheel on his good foot. We ain't busting grape. These niggas fake sealed documents still popping it. Fuck the certified crack babies. Come get your mama hit. Shit ain't selling. They just want the drama shit. Fuck these little hip niggas. I'm the Oscars, bitch. So yeah, they were just being the Butcher, but who's the one that smacked him in Miami? There's another rapper that they reference. That was Jim Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And let's say this. This is the second time he got shots on this that month. The first wait till later. According to tracks like, you know, Skinny Shook 2 with another sequel track which has the beat scrolling for the first 2 seconds, so gives channel 2.4 minutes, give the lyrics like Black Ball Head Jesus, I hang on the cross, it's find me, but I stay bouncing off it, like, you know. Because that sounds like, okay, well, that was kind of good. Feeling got that Ray Lazarus does on the piano to the way Freddie does on the hook with his singing and you know his style of singing, just like it's like you know like well if you know what I'm saying, it's like you know he's kind of fun with the shit, which like basically you know basically saying basically the song like basically seen the hoe like a hoe, as in I might fuck you a couple of times but I never say I do to you. Also, the mention of take the condom off does say suspicious things about that situation. Like, okay, I see what he meant.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. Like, oh boy. If we get another verse, another feature verse in here, it's not being Larry June, which, okay, I'm surprised he's not beef with him for some reason. But I mean, he's beef with a lot of people, but I don't know. And I'll say this, if you know Larry June's music, you know he'd be, you know, very lax, mellow, maybe kind of sleepy sometimes, like, if you don't like his verse, I kind of get it. Like he did, sometimes it was very depends how you feel about him. Get one Larry June a little bit later on. And there's the track "I Still Love Her," which you asked about relationships with women, like luxury brands and money, and talks about the streets and that. And I know you're faking. Like the track is called "I Still Love Her," as in H period dot. You know, with you know H E R. You're thinking that one song from Common, you know, that the one song from Common, but it's a nod to a Japanese, song from a Japanese show, Teriyaki Boys, which is something called Her, standing for Hanato Eve Rap, which means either true rap or real rap, basically that type of shit. That mention this album, has a lot of Japanese aesthetics, like, I mean, look at the album cover. I mean, I would like the first one, that's Alfredo as in, you know, pasta. This one is ramen. As you can see, you see the bowl, the eggs, noodles, you see that shit.
Well, they do say and that it, ramen is just weeb spaghetti after all.
Yeah, I wonder what the album, like solo something, or I don't know.
Be Chinese and they do lo mein.
Yeah. All right. Then there's Shangri-La, which has like a very mellow beat, which I kind of like. Which okay, I gotta give it that. Like. Does have this very cynical view of relationships with women, you know, from drug use and very cynical calendars, which basically say, like, basically says, like you know, but I say cynical because I'm like, you know, like, basically, like, you know, like, what should happen with that, which I thought, okay, like, given what Frey's been through, throughout the years, which I get, okay, maybe I can see that, but okay. There's also the track I like, which is called Gas Station Sushi. I meant the song, not the real shit, which I haven't had, nor do I think I want to. Yeah, no.
Don't fuck with that shit. You're gonna end up like that episode of Futurama with the Fry being smart because the fucking gas station egg salad.
And of course, because we're having a Shrek, and well, you'll shot another rapper, one that worked in the past. That being Currency. Yeah, apparently, like, the last thing they was Fetty from 7 years ago, and apparently he was pissed at giving pissed enough for not promoting the album well enough, or not doing a show, or shooting a video for it, which I kind of get why. I mean, I know Crazy got an album out, which I haven't heard shit about it until I saw my YouTube music, but, I mean, much like Currency, I mean, was Gibbs wrong to be pissed? I mean, God, I mean, no. And then there's Lavish Habits, which, yeah, another diss track. Well, shots being thrown, and that's not to say who it is, but I just say the lyrics to you. I'm gonna squeeze academics titties, that fat bastard. Gonna diss me to complete. He's a rap bastard. Triple social funeral, me, Big Fendi, bitch, 10 blickies. PL City girls like P. Diddy, bitch, get with me. Okay. Which, I get that last line because one of the girls from City Girls was dating Diddy at the time, and yeah, we see how that went. And of course, it's academics gunner because well, fuck academics, and gonna, well, he's there too, but yeah. And okay, I will say there's like effects of being broke black, educated, and drugged out. Effects of being young black rich man alive. Me, they killed, did take off Dolph, exceeded size G for the fame and Dan Cheney that undermined me. To give a fuck about me, both rappers, I like variety. Okay. Then we got gold feet, which I'm gonna say, like, but that just sounds like a very distorted work version of that. You know the music of the, from The Price is Right when it said, "Come on down," like, you know, that music, like that sound. It sounded like something that, but kind of warped it away. At least that's what I got from hearing it. And of course we got another feature in here, that being J.I.D. And yeah, his verse was fucking amazing. Like, yeah, I think he outshot Freddie and Nami in that. And both rappers did the thing, just to mind you, but that's a really fucking fire. And the beat's pretty fire too. And gotta see Jid on the album of the artist whose album isn't dog shit. I mean, he hasn't played times, but most of the times, yeah, like, you see. And, of course, final two tracks, you got John Claude, which, yes, he makes a Bloodsport reference, once again, taking another shot at Benny, which was him getting shot in Houston that one time. And also lying about his Grammy loss, which was about Grammy, like, And then the closing track, A Thousand Mountains, in the first few lines where he said, "You go to the mountains, give him a flute." He's talking about going to the mountains and you give him a flute while he's saying the rapper on this level, only rapper on this level is 150,000. He has the same one that retired from rap and does instrument records with flutes, which I kind of get. But yeah, I gotta say with this album, like, I know, let me stick with my time off your soul to Japanese, like, he's such a type of thing. Was like, yeah, them folks are trying to play as a rapper and get to be, and when he was rapping, and like, yeah, but yeah, like, so, yeah, like this one, like, he's either, you know, fuck with the beef or, you know, probably get tired of age or what, but not rapper, like, you know, like, that's type of the bullshit as in age, you know what I mean? But yeah, and of course, like, with Alcohol Production, which I think this. Production kind of elevated from the first. Like, my favorite piece here is Ensalada, Gas Station Sushi, and Gold Feet. Which, okay, I was digging this. Coming over him, but was like, oh, this is good shit right here, and yeah, was that the first one? I'm not sure. I mean, I will say it won't be high on my list, but yeah, including another album, including another joint album together, and also heard next year he might do a collab with Kitchenato next year, which should be interesting.
Yep, certainly will be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm just gonna get some of the June albums very, very quick. I've got four, so real quick. Little Sims, Lotus. I heard much from him in a while, but okay, I'd say for the album, it's pretty decent album with a lot of things about Little Sims, you know, basically from the pressure, burnout, grief, vulnerability, based on the things that show her raw self I'm not gonna say it's typical artists to do that, but hey, something's better with that boost, better than that, to show your true self. Like, you got fusion of, you know, hip hop, jazz, funk production. Like, I heard, like, I know we heard a single like, free like a few months back, and I thought, okay, some check was solid. A good features from people like Yuki Nagano, Bosomni, and Sample on there. Yeah, like, it's not my answer as much, but I can appreciate what she can do. It's a good album. I can definitely, you know, recommend that. And now I'm going to talk about an artist that none of us had talked about in a while. Because they take lengthy breaks. Hmm. So, remember the name Yugen Blackrock?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she has an album out. And it's been 6 years. Just like her last, just like that, the last album came 6 years after that album. Wow, she, okay, damn, she just said, like, I'm taking my time with this shit, which, I mean, good for her. Anyway, the album's called The Illusion of Being. And yeah, like, she took a serious time, and I can see why, like, you hear elements of, you know, trip hop and possibly some post grunge rock in the music, and like as you went out, like, dig deep into some stuff like Afro mysticism and the common language, her shop lyrics, and the overpression, and then, yeah, I gotta say, this is something that, definitely something that I will probably. Well, probably need to go back to a couple of times to see, just to get the point of it. But yeah, I can definitely appreciate for being what it is. Even if I don't listen to it as much, I can say that I can appreciate what they're doing, because like, okay, this is some solid shit. I can definitely look at that. Okay. Next up is street rapper collab time, because I always do that shit. Flea Lord and Ito with Rock America 3. Yeah, so it's Crew Jammer, Flea Lord, and producer Ito talking about, and yeah, but yeah, basically, it's what you should get for me from this type of project. You get me, you get some Boop Up Productions, it can be Dusty and Mellow, Flea Lord sounds good on this, the beats aren't too shabby, and it's something I can see underground hip-hop heads digging, because it's like, okay, just something that I can, it's something that, yeah, yeah, I definitely, you know, dig this. And the last June release, Slick Rick with Victory. You know, I remember like way back in my day, I remember my dad having like a Slick Rick album or tape. I mean, it's such a long time ago. Like, I barely remember, because like, but I do remember seeing that name and hearing some of his music. But yeah, and one thing I remember hearing him on the record was Westside Gunns, who made The Sunshine in 2020, and now that's a new album which released both by Master P.O., who's doing a 7-album set of Legend Has It with a lot of hip hop legends. You'll see one in a minute, and also releases, is that label, and 7 Wallace, A.K.A. Idris Elba's record label.
He has a record label?
Yeah, Idris Elba. You know the guy who after, yeah, he has a music career. Remember?
Oh, I thought he was busy with gold scams.
Okay. Anyway, with this album, it's been like 2 decades since the last album, which. Okay, and I can say this, like, I think we said this before, but yeah, this is really good album. Rappers might be older now, but they showed that, yeah, they may be old, but they have lots of stuff in the rap game. Like, the beats fit right for this, right for him. Like, has to draw several memorable features. Like, yeah, the two features he got is UK, it's like rapper Giggs. And Nas, which, well, makes sense. Mass Appeal is his record label, so yeah, it's a very nice, short and sweet album. Like, this has only 27 minutes of it. Like, it's a good spot where, you know, where you get in and get out, and don't waste your time, and you're like, oh, okay, got a good shot of that. Oh yeah, also check out an album, Custom Here and Documents, which, all right, those are pretty good. And now we go over July slate. These are the ones that I actually have listened to in July. And, oh look, Boardy James, you're here again, because
won't stop.
Yeah. Considering you took a break in June, you figure, yeah, I'll come back in July. And we're going to go to Q2, Late My Own Funeral. And I'm going to say this. Maybe my favorite record of his this so far this year. Like, I know, like, ranking a bunch of Boney albums this year. Like, which one do I like the most? I mean, I have said I like the Chuck Strangest one the most. This had to beat, maybe because you know I'm more familiar with him and Craven, like with him and Craven, like considering like they've been doing it for three albums, and I think when it comes to him and Craven, this might be my favorite Boldy joint that's basically not that's non-alchemist. Basically, it's like, well, yeah. You take one white guy for another white guy. Well, damn, that's it. you got tracks like Spiderweb and Windshields, which was a single which I did like. They got tracks like Meal Prepping and Antonio Tutter, which they just got a hit for me. Like I like these selections from Craven slightly more than the previous two efforts. Like in comparison to the. To other tracks, like I still decided, I like First Chase to Robbery and I like Pussy Leadership. I mean, they're probably the best non-Alchemist Boldy projects, but maybe Fair Chase might be higher than Penalty, but I don't know. Like, all I say is like, I don't know, kind of one of my favorite projects for me from Boldy this year. Like overall, that Boldy release, considering he released a lot of shit, and probably won't stop until you get to December. December as well. But yeah. This one's another great collection, another to his catalog. Next up, we got Larry Jude and Cardo Got Wings, or just Cardo. He goes by Cardo or Cardo Got Wings. Or does he?
These are things we will never know.
Which I found out they did clap before. He did an album with him called The Night Shift. And I thought that one was fine. Even though the big highlight of that album was a track that was titled after the previous album, which was The Great Escape with Alchemist. And there's a track in there called The Great Escape with Alchemist that feature. There's a track called named after the previous album. Featured the previous producer on the label who raps, but yeah. But this one, I get why people say people are sometimes bored with them. Like, I don't hate the album, but it's like, okay, you know what? I kind of get why people say Larry June can be kind of lethargic, kind of don't listen to. It's like, he can be kind of tedious. And I was listening in some of the songs, like, those songs I still like, and like songs like Organic Free Range Chicken, which okay, he always found and then stuff like You Feel Me or Canadian Snow and still gambling. Like I probably stick to his work with the Alchemist. I mean, I think I like that shit more, but I don't know. I'll just say this, this is like a soft, really a soft but recommended on a tangent. It's like if you like Larry June, then okay, then you might like this. If you don't like Larry June, then look, I'm not doing you a favor. It's recommending him. Like, okay, next up, DJ Haram, which even though he's wrong, like,
you, oh which, damn, I forgot about else, that. Holy shit!
Yeah. If you know her, then you missed a lot of Arm & Hammer and Billy Woods, or basically Arm & Hammer, and you know, and other guy too. I got to, her album beside myself, which of course she's under Hyperdub, and fun a band came and says it's a credit ensemble built on Middle Eastern music that finds equal space in this formidable laboratory of Jersey club punk noise acoustic production instrumentation and sampling turn tambourine shakers Darbuka drums and violin matched with trance-like rave synth, walls and anyways and lurking, dribbling bass. Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like it. Like, yeah, and I gotta say, yeah, kinda like it. Yeah, I feel like each track's all something different, but no, it feels like, it does feel like, you know, throw random shit at a blender. It's not like you're throwing, like, here's some watermelon and strawberries and sardines. There's no sardines in this, okay? Just saying. Like, there's no sardines. Like, the sound blends well, it checks with, you know, like, fishnets and stuff, and Stanley Warhammer Hammer, which I like Fishnets a lot. Like the song which what song with an artist named Baby with named Baby Baby Mother that is BBYMUTHA, which okay, as well as Shay Ray and August Ray, like they both are kind of they all sound kind of fire on this. Like I dumped the fuck out of it, and yeah, and some of the instrumental cuts are solid as well. I know when someone like playing the Arm and Hammer. I'm gonna be honest, I'm not that well versed in it. I try to understand a bit. Or at least I try to, not sound like a dumbass, but yeah, but I appreciate the effort. But again, I appreciate what they've done. And with DJ Haram, it's like, yeah, I was into it. I was into it. Like, this is some stellar shit. I can definitely dig this. And now go back to the Mass Appeal thing. Like I said, they're doing a series of albums, for legendary rappers. And next one we got is, well, Raekwon with The Empress New Clothes. Yeah, his 8th studio album, which, come to think of it, it has been a few years since his last album, The Wild, which was way back in 2017. That's when that was our baby years as a podcast.
Ah, yeah, ye olden days. The Switch was only on the market for a year.
Yeah. Now, I can do them all, but if you know Raekwon, like, it's a reminder why, there's a reason why he has a piece of hip-hop. You see philosophy shit, he's full storytelling, and his lucid bars on shit like this. Everything has still got that Wu-Tang flavor. It's just from the, like, the Dungeon has that, still got the Wu-Tang flavor. It's just the people, people like, who's just like, Snipe Beats, Stolen Drums with no vowels. Frank G, Rhodes Art, even some help from the Justice League, as in different Justice League. And Swiss Beats on a couple of them. And you even got him collab with the other boys on the track doing the thing. Oh yeah, Nas is on there too. Again, no shit. The label, the label that we're using it on. Like, yeah, that was a good listen. What we know from reading out the years is proof that hip hop is still, I wasn't gonna say it for later, but I'm gonna say this now. Like, we've been told that hip hop is a young man's game, but given the most recent years, yeah, the OGs still got it. And even ages is like, they rap better than the 20-year-olds serving right now. You'll see. They're like, it's like fine wine. They get better with age. Next up, Benny the Butcher. Benny the Butcher was Summertime Butch 2. And yes, even though it's a record that took shots at Benny, I still listen to him as well. Because I like Benny the Butcher. I can like when rappers speak with each other. It's in a kitchen drink situation where I like one rapper and not the other. This is, yeah. Anyway, so, Summertime Butch 2, the sequel to his last project, Summertime Butch, which I gotta say, I like this better than the first one. Maybe because he's still trying to go mainstream or not, but honestly, like, he's still in his lane. He starts up with some good joints like Jasmine's and Hood on Fire. Like, they both produced by Derringer, and I can say both tracks are fire. And, like, Jasmine features Westside Gunn doing his verse. And Hood on Fire got a verse from Bruiser Wolf. He's on that track as well. Both of the tracks on there too. Then you got Told You So with Mike Romeda on the beat, which, okay, I ain't heard that name in a while.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know, going to the user story of, comes from Rising Hustle, the hip hop heavyweight. Of course, that other tracks here is like, you know, basically, you know, Rags to Riches and Day of Life, you know, representing Buffalo, Black Soprano Family, and of course, Griselda, like, you know, basically like what I used to hear from Benny record, which, again, I like it better than the first one. Like, come to think of it, Benny's output for this year has been better than the last year. Like, maybe because, you know, it's shorter and they don't feel bloated, there's another good project as well. I can definitely dig it. And yes, people, I can say this. I can like both Benny and Freddie Gibbs, alright? Like, this is the case. This is the case where, yeah, they beefing, but I fuck with both of them. I just won't tell the other one that. I mean, most people probably listen to both Benny and Freddy. Just saying.
Yeah, like I'd listen to both of them, but I'd never tell them that at a dinner party or anything.
Yeah, it's like your friend, your man, and then like you'll Benny over you too. You smell like Gibbs. You smell like bitch. Oh shit.
Oh, got him.
Okay. Next up, Open My Ego, Neighborhood Gods Unlimited. Which I will say, I will go deep through this album. I cannot because let's be honest, like, so many people dug in this album better than me. Like Fantano, or Spectrum Pulse, or any other reviewer that thinking about this. I'm just gonna say this. Do I like it? Yes. Just when this go over my head? Yeah. Was I like accepting this shit? I could, but I feel like people smarter than me did it better than me. Like, I know it feels short, but there's something that I do like and appreciate. Like, I can appreciate shit like this because it's like, but yeah, like, yeah, I'll just go with that. Like, yeah, good album. Maybe Robert say more later on about this more than me, but yeah, let's go with that. All right. And then there's a very niche one I ran into. A name that I haven't ran into a long time, Homeboy Sandman.
Oh, wow. Yeah, him too.
Yeah. It teams up with UK rapper producer Sonny Jim, who I first noticed in the Jimmy D. Nicholas Craven album back in May, teamed up for this project. It's called Soli Deo Gloria. And I hope I said that right. It's the sound, like, I'll say it's so, see, like, it's decent, like, the sound brings it at the same way, like, some heavy jazzy and a soulful touch and homeboy on the mic sounds nice, like, the worst of solo, and, yeah, I gotta say, yeah, it's pretty good, so I can say. Okay, I have one more, and for the first time this year, it's a lowlight. Now, you're wondering, which lowlight could I pick? Could I pick the Lil Wayne album? Which, no, I got no patience to listen to that album like this. The only thing I know is that fucking Peanuts and Elephants song that pretty much faded away.
Oh, God, yeah, that's fucking shit.
Yeah. Now, you've been thinking, does it mean just a bit? No, I know no damn Justin Bieber. You're like, I listen to that shit. I'm not Juicy, damn it. My hair is black. My hair is black, not blonde. Even though, not that shit. No, so if not those two, then what album could I be talking about that is a low light? What could I be doing? The album I'm talking about is Travis Scott and Cactus Jack, Jack Boys 2.
Ugh.
Yeah, so we all know it's a sequel to that first coming album, Jack Boys, which basically, you know, Cactus Jack as a record label, basically, you know, his homeboys, like, basically the club of rappers, like, you got people like Don Toliver, Sheck West, So Fago, Wyatt the Sensei, Luxury Tex 50, and Scott's DJ Chase B. Yes, this is my name, Luxury Tex 50. I don't know why. But anyway, like, what the, like, anyway, like, I didn't listen to the first, like, I listened to the first one they did, which was an EP around 7 tracks, which I thought, okay, that was okay. That was fine. Like, I remember one track I liked there that featured the late Pop Smoke, which was in a dungeon. That's the first time I know it's Pop Smoke in that album, which I thought, oh, he sounds nice. Then a month later, he died, which was a shame. But I thought maybe he could have been something big. But I don't know who knows what he was. But now on the show, I have probably I'm one of the few people in this show listen to Travis Scott fully, and say that, well, yeah, in recent years, I ain't been so hot on them. Like, of course, a couple years back, Utopia, I listened to that, and I thought that was just, it soured on me, maybe because the songs I like, not because of Travis. Like, take it from me, somebody who actually likes the album Birds in the Trap Sing Midnight over this, over that, over Utopia. And I'm gonna say this right now, and this one you see coming, this sucks. Like, all these tracks are just fucking boring to listen to. Like, some of the songs got the same damn thing with this very eerie shit that continues loop to nothing. Like, some of the songs work attention. Find a song that sports attention to me was harder doing this. Like, a track with him and Twilight going on some dance hall shit, and that was like, not terrible. And of course, since I said it's Jack Boys, it's the other artists, like Don Toliver, which is like, okay, he's whatever, he's fine, but let me know, give me more. But that's like, whatever. Of course, you got that one check with Travis Scott, that one check we talked about before, which that's what we said that was produced by Adrian Brody, which I'm not sure if I believe that or not. I mean, remember we talked about that? Was about that track where he said produced by Adrian Brody?
Yeah.
Which is like, I'm not even sure if I believe that. It's like, I don't know. It's like, seems kind of weird, but whatever. But anyway, you got tracks on there with that feature Future, Playboi Carti, and 21 Savage, but I don't know. I just don't care. And plus, there's a track where he samples a band, but he didn't create a sample, because I know some men on TikTok are saying that he sampled them, but didn't clear it. So they're kind of, pissed and should outright be pissed. Which I don't know the name of them, but I heard them somewhere. But of course, you got Bun B on there doing skits, but no verses, which is gonna save the album, but you know what, he didn't get this. And then, well, of course, you heard that one track called Champagne and Vacay, which he did a very sorry ass Pusha T diss, which really, that was first the gun trying to diss Freddie Gibbs. They're like doing something you miss. And yeah, there's the track Shine. The one beat track with Gorilla, who altered the hook to it, which doesn't know, called Shine. Okay, there's this reggae dance hall artist named Barrison Levy. He has a song called Here I Come. That song, and now here's the thing, like, Shine, if you don't know Shine, he used to be around from the early 2000s, he did a song called Bad Boys. Was from Bad Boy Records, story about Bad Boy Records, which they don't last long, there's a song called Bad Boys, and of course, Brandon Levy did a song. And of course, in a song about the Levy, like he was speaking Jamaican patois, and yeah, Travis got her in the why would it that shit was like, you took Jamaican patois and just turned the nonsense. That's kind of disrespectful, to be honest. You took a song that. Yeah, I'm saying here, like, in a lot of languages, he just turned the bullshit. Like, I mean, I know some people find it funny, but the joke kind of wears off fast. It's like, now it just sucks. It's like, I know this album's be like, hooking the town of the Cactus Jack label, but nothing to think about it. Like, the only artist that I know on that label is Don Toliver, and that's it. It's like, Song Fago, I said his name before, but forgot about it. Why the Sensei, I figure out, oh, and I know I heard before. He was on a better album. He was on GNX. And I'll say it's like this. I don't know if it's not an overkill situation where it's like the Travis Scott show with a bunch of dudes you don't give a shit about afterwards, but not to mention between the standard and the Lux edition, yes, the Lux edition that released a few days later, it was probably an hour. It's like first edition was 55 minutes, the other one was 1 hour and 3 minutes, which is like, I'm not going to listen to a Lux edition for more tracks I don't give a shit about. Like, this sucks. Like, not understanding, like, remember, like, you only remember that one track because of fucking me. Like, all those other tracks is like, is either garbage or boring or just plain bad. Like, this happened with the number one on the Billboard charts. So did Gunna. And guess what? Those albums they have to remember for being great. You just remember that, it beat this better album that people listen to, that people actually reference. Did this shit. But I will say this. Jack Boys 2, it's not good. Boom. Yeah, that's it.
Good Lord, what is the world coming to? Alright, so now it's time to move on to me over here. So, I got a few top picks here. Maybe these I can run through a bit quickly. So, first of all, I was checking through, you know, the metal blogosphere to see if there was anything interesting I might have missed. And on the blog Toilet of Hell, yes, that's really their name, their stuff is a lot better than you might think. I heard about this band called Malformed. They're a death metal act from Finland. They've had 2 EPs out before dropping their full-length debut this month titled Confinement of Flesh. And it's a pretty satisfyingly heavy and brutal slab of death metal. It's a pretty lean record at 32 minutes, delivering plenty of super rapid-fire like riffs and sweeps and solos. Equally fast double kick runs and hard-hitting drums alongside equally hard guttural vocals and such. Just add in all this, like, technicality and intensity and just altogether raw, you know, production styles for good measure. And you just have a no-nonsense record here for the genre. Like, the best way I can describe it is that this falls into sort of, like, the lineage of the death metal band Incantation. In fact, this is probably some of the most overt Incantation worship I think I've heard on a metal record in a while. And I do mean that as a compliment, of course. That kind of, like, super rapid, you know, technical, very kind of cavernous production style. That's the kind of death metal I always find myself drawn to, so good stuff. I can't wait to hear album number 2 from these guys. I think they got a decent future ahead of them. Alright, next up, there is this new Open Mic Eagle record, Neighborhood Gods Unlimited. And it occurs to me that I'm probably going to be halfway in between just a brief overview and the kind of super deep analyses that guys like Spectrum Pulse can dish out. Although, at the very least, this means I won't have to deal with the possibility of Open Mic Eagle reacting to this on a live stream. I can handle that pressure. But if I had to describe it just in a sentence, I think this album almost kind of feels like... Okay, so I know Open Mic Eagle, like a lot of rappers, is a big fan of the works of MF Doom. This almost kind of feels like a successor to the Danger Doom album, The Mouse and the Mask. See... There's this conceptual vibe running through the record of just whoever the narrator is watching a comedy television network late at night. Literally, there's all these, like, interstitials of, like, you're watching dark comedy television. You know, more or less an allusion to when Mike had a stint doing a show for Comedy Central before that kind of went away. I don't think it was a super long tenure, unfortunately, which is a shame.
Yeah.
So, production-wise here, you do get, like, the usual mix of, like, you have beats with kind of, like, these lush, hazy, oddly nostalgic samples, sometimes sounding a bit like mallcore and more somber, low-key production. Again, a lot of it kind of sounds like it's the modern evolution of, like, if Mouse and the Mask did drop in 2025, this is what it would sound like production-wise. And then, of course, when you're delving into the lyrics, it kind of bounces back and forth between, you know, deeply confessional, oddball, abstract stream of conscious, and kind of darkly humorous in a myriad of ways. the album opener is called Woke Up Knowing Everything, and it's kind of sucked from the perspective of someone who suddenly understands the truth about why the world is as fucked as it is. Translation, they fell asleep watching conspiracy videos. You know the ones. They're like, oh, I see the secrets. They're all, the celebrities are making these weird hand gestures. It's actually signs of the devil. You know, that type of thing.
So all of it, they turn the Dale Gribble.
InfoWars, yeah. Like Dale Gribble type shit.
Yeah.
But if you want a bit more levity after that, there's the song Me and Akil Stealing Stuff from Work, which, again, 100% sounds like an episode of a Comedy Central sitcom. The entire lyrics is just like these two guys fucking around at like a mall retail job. It frequently repeats the line, show the Mephistos, which I think is supposed to be like a brand of shoe, but at some point it's remarked, hey, isn't that the name of that like devil guy? Who knows? The whole thing's probably like a metaphor about how working retail jobs is just absolute hell. And then, of course, there's the funny line, hit Mickey D's for that whack check burger. There are plenty of other songs on the record that, you know, on a different part of the spectrum, delve into these more meditative frames of mind, like Okay, But I'm the Phone Screen, where it's mainly Mike rapping about dropping his phone while crossing the street and kind of having this like existential panic about it because of how much of himself is on that thing. Like, you know, vacation photos, important memos, song ideas. Kind of reminds me of that time that the guitarist of Metallica just had like 70 song ideas on a phone and then he lost it. But yeah, with how much of ourselves we put on that thing, both literally and metaphorically, it's probably not the most comforting thing when a phone breaks. Of course, there is the hushed hypnotic tones in the beat of Sorry I Got Huge, also not a euphemism, which more or less sounds like shutting himself out from the rest of the world for this desperate sense of solitude. But like I said, for as much as it could be like, you know, abstract, metaphorical, and dive into these different frames of mind, there's also, you know, that sense of humor, especially when he starts name-dropping very, like, dweeby geek references, like the Simon Petrikov name-drop in Contraband, The Plug Has Bags of Me, or even in the song Michigan J. Wonder, which has the line, hands glowing like I'm Hohenheim. Can't say I was prepared to hear a Full Metal Alchemist reference on a rap record this year. And then, of course, there's the funniest song on the album, at least in my opinion, My Co-Worker Clark Kent's Mysterious Black Box, which is sung from the POV of an employee at the Daily Planet, who clearly knows that the Clark Kent guy is actually Superman and that he's not fucking fooling anyone with this shit. But it does kind of raise the question of what POV this is being sung from, because, like, it's a co-worker, but is it just, like, a generic Daily Planet reporter, or is it any significant Superman lore character? I mean, if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure Jimmy Olsen in My Adventures with Superman is black, so is it from the perspective of that version? Who knows? But, yeah, there's definitely a lot of interesting stuff going on. If I had to hazard a guess, part of me thinks maybe this album is venting certain frustrations about the Comedy Central experience, because there's this running motif aside from, you know, the interstitials and stuff, where, like, at the end of every other song, you hear this smashing sound. And it took me a while to think about what it could be. My main hypothesis I have right now in a thematic sense is that maybe this is Mike throwing a remote at the television in absolute frustration. You know, because I can't imagine, like, given that Comedy Central doesn't give a shit about any shows other than The Daily Show and South Park, I wouldn't be surprised if he got the runaround while trying to produce that thing. So, yeah, you know, is what it is.
Give it Comedy Central in the way they do shit. I mean, yeah, that might be true.
But, I mean, this is honestly a really good, like, Mike project. Hell, I'd probably say it's his... I mean, he's never had a bad project, but I would say this is probably his best album since Anime Trauma and Divorce. Now we have one last top pick here. This is a bit of a weird one that I just kind of found scrolling through Blue Sky. So I saw someone on that I follow tweeting about this band called Blind Equation, a trio out of the city of Chicago who dropped their newest album this past month titled A Funeral in Purgatory. Listening to that album and going through their discography, they're certainly quite the eclectic group. I mean that positively, of course. And the briefest summation I can give, using this album as kind of a framework, think about like every sort of extreme heavy music subgenre that you could think of, like hardcore, grind, screamo, deathcore, etc. Now, take all the guitars out and swap them with every kind of electronic production instrumental type thing that you could think of. And I mean all of them, from like buzzy, like filthy bass synths to more pretty JRPGs synth chords, and of course some of that good old fashioned chiptune. Kind of like an unholy mix of like Onomatoguchi, The Algorithm, and Wrist Meat Razor, or something like that. It's really odd, but it's very weirdly compelling. And this new album, which I think is their first on the label Relapse, if I remember correctly, it's a very distinct evolution of what they've been doing on their previous records. With this one, the songs are still very blisteringly heavy and aggressive, with plenty of weirdly catchy riffs and synths, but the album has a bit more of a tunefulness to it. Like, it leans way more on, like, the electronic production stuff, and it incorporates more clean vocals into the mix. Songs like A Funeral opened like the most somber Super Nintendo game ever made, before settling into a lot of these like fast-paced early 2000s metalcore riffs and breakdowns with lots of like upbeat rave electronics. Same with the track In Purgatory, which basically just throws walls and walls of MIDI keyboards and gravity blasts at the listener in a truly wonderful chaotic discordance. It swerves all over the place. In particular, the tone here almost kind of feels like It reminds me of, like, the peak era of the band I Set My Friends on Fire. And as someone who spun a lot of You Can't Spell Slaughter Without Laughter back in the day, that is a compliment. It's almost kind of fun how gleefully this album will have, like, you know, deathcore growls and single chord chugging breakdowns filled in with, like, dial-up sounds and, like, just all other kinds of fun, heavy shit. You know what? Here's an idea. Get Blind Equation and Fire Tools in the studio together. Make it happen. So, yeah, it's certainly one of the more oddball, like, heavy music offerings, but if you stick with it, you'll find something interesting to like. It's certainly got my attention. And now we can move on to the quick round stuff. So, let's start off with this new Lord album, Virgin. It's pretty good. What we get here is a return to the melodrama style in terms of production, with a lot of these like detailed synth pop textures, all with a lot of really solid vocal performances conveying themes of, you know, love gone wrong, her relationship to her fame, and just kind of trying to fully understand her general sense of self. Definitely way more emotionally impactful than whatever was happening with Solar Power, although I don't think this album might have done much on the charts, which is kind of a shame because I think a lot of people are probably missing out on a pretty good pop record. This new Fallujah album, Xenotaph, they're sort of getting better. Like, it's less obnoxious than their previous releases, but I still think there's something missing from their dynamic to make them anything special. Like, maybe they really, really need to get some actual rhythm guitar in there to help flesh things out. There's this new King Gizzard album, Phantom Island. It was recorded at the same time as their album from last year, Flight B741. And it pretty much sounds like an offshoot of that record, with just more of an orchestral backing in spots. Very indebted to 70s rock, soul, and jazz. There's some depth there, but it's not super high up on my King Gizzard rankings. This new Merzbow album, Sadonis. It is a Merzbow album, so it sounds like the extremely distorted, blown-out sounds of a hot shower. Pigpen? Yeah, this Maddie Matheson hardcore band. It's a pretty alright debut. It's very meat-and-potatoes hardcore in the purest definition of the word. Kind of sounds descended from, like, the lineage of Boston hardcore, bands like Death Before Dishonor, going from low and slow to fire-hot tempos. It's an album that's got some real meat on its bones. Maddie's really got the sauce as a vocalist. Have you figured out this is an excuse to sling a bunch of bad food puns at you? I'll spare you from the rest. So, moving on to Operator, this debut solo project from Paramore's Zach Barrow. It is one of the albums of all time. It kind of has, like, this indie rock, synth pop sort of thing going on, sort of in the vein of, like, Mac DeMarco, Tame Impala, maybe kind of like a lesser Steve Lacy. It's not bad, but it's not an essential listen by any means. Like, whether you're a synth pop guy or a Paramore super fan, your life doesn't gain or lose anything with this album in it. And now we move on to the lowlights, because you know what? I've been getting off too easy this year so far. I need to put myself in the path of some shit. Or just some extreme disappointment and letdowns. So let's start with the first lowlight here. This new Born of Osiris record, Through Shadows. Now, look, I'm not going to contradict the consensus that The Discovery is a quintessential, you know, metalcore record of the 2010s. I spun it as much as the next guy, but like, Jesus Christ. It's like this band really only had like those first two or three albums worth of legitimate ideas. And now they're still just going through the motions because they got nothing better to do with their time. I mean, like, okay, did you listen to The Discovery back in the day? Well, this is just that, but not as cool or good. Skip it. Then, of course, we got a couple major pop releases this past couple months from online influencers. And between the two that I made myself listen to for some ungodly reason, technically the Addison Rae record is the better one, but that isn't saying much. Alright, so production-wise, it's what you would expect. It's your typical contemporary, like, synth, dance pop type of thing. Addison's vocals and their performance and production are very breathy and ethereal, even during more rapid-fire vocal passages. To be nice for a bit, the production, again, there's a couple instrumentals on here I like the shuffling groove of Aquamarine or the synth melodies on Fame Is a Gun, but Addison's vocals and lyrics don't do much for me. Like, for the most part, she's alright, but at times she sounds like she's co-opting ideas from other singers that have come before her, like the high-pitched falsettos of Camila Cabello, or some of the oddly specific lyrical tics of a songwriter like Sabrina Carpenter. Like, there's a song on here called Diet Pepsi, which is just all about fucking in the backseat of a car. It's called that because she does name-drop drinking Diet Pepsi in the middle of all this, which... Is that a sex drink? Like, okay, maybe I don't understand because I'm a virgin and I have yet to fuck, technically, but, like, I don't think Diet Pepsi is the drink I would reach for if I was, smashing in the back of a Toyota Corolla. I feel like I would get, like, some alcohol or water or, like, a Mellow Yellow or something. Just Diet Pepsi, really?
We should call it Diet. It's been called Diet Baja Blast.
Oh God! That I feel like that would just kill the night right then and there. Like, you drink that? Just bye. Like drink diet sodas if you will. I just don't think those are sex drinks. I'm not sure that really enhances the mood for lovemaking. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, otherwise it's just a lot of glitz and glamour and. I have lots of money, and I have hot sex. That's just all the record is. Anyway, moving on to the next lowlight here. I don't know if this is a hot take or not. I've seen a couple people say they like this record, but, like, I just think this new Kesha album is really incoherent as an album, per se. Like, I just keep trying to understand what the point is, and, like, even just taking it song by song, there's just so much weird stuff that I don't think she's... Like, I can understand experimentation, but I don't think as a performer she's weird enough to pull some of this stuff off. Like, I don't get the weird polka accordion waltz stuff in Joyride. Yippee-ki-yay is, like, one of the weakest country pop bangers I've ever heard. It's so weirdly empty for being, like, a big gang vocal stomp and clap sort of thing. Though it's still better than certain other stomp clap type of songs. I'll get to you later. Anyway, the more I listen to Boy Crazy, the more I just, like... Okay, so I said it sounds like a lesser version of that Lizzo song, Boys, but, like, honestly, the more I think about it, that and a lot of, like, the low points on this record feel like... It's like a Flanderization of Kesha's personality. Like, she's almost playing, like, a Simpsons parody of herself on this record. And it's funny, because, like... Okay, so I finally did get around to that, that Erica Harlicker album, Non-Disclosure, the album is alright. Like, for the most part, it's kind of a lot of typical pop ideas from, like, you know, big pop ballads to more Avril Lavigne, Radio Disney pop punk type stuff. But there was a song on there called Shut the Fuck Up, which is a way better Kesha song than anything on this actual Kesha album. Not even kidding. Like there's a couple decent tracks on here. Like Red Flag has a fun, catchy beat dedicated to lyrics about the pursuit of guys that are probably worse for your overall health than a combo meal from Chipotle. And Love Forever is like the best song on the record, mostly because the production kind of sounds like what if Daft Punk was still around in 2025. But if you want an honest example of how the album just does not really keep itself focused or cohesive in any way, it would be the album closer, Cathedral, which is this really emotional piano ballad that strips away the synths and autotune to sort of let Kesha, you know, vent about some emotionally impactful stuff, trying to find like peace and redemption through religious imagery and really tough and trying times. So it sounds like probably how you were imagining it does, except there's this really weird, out of place, like this little electronic bridge that lasts all of 20 seconds towards the end of the song and then just kind of goes away without any explanation. Do not get this record. Now, moving on to albums that I also really don't get, and this one is going to read like contrarianism, but I'm just going to say it. I still don't fucking get Turnstile, and I don't think I ever will. In fact, listening to this new album, Never Enough, okay, so it looks like the band is at the point where they're trying to fully pivot their sound into a kind of hybridization of their punk roots with more shoegaze, kind of indie synth-pop material, opening right on that softer note with the title track, eventually leading into Soul, which kind of has like a driving steady punk rhythm contrasted with a lot of these airy, echo-laden vocals, and this extended bridge that has like the thumping tom rhythm on the drums, and some spacey synths making the vocal melodies. And it just sounds fucking goofy as fuck. Like, it's so ridiculous. Doesn't help that the track afterwards is the song I Care, which in and of itself is trying to be like really 80s new wave, but instead it just sounds like a much, much lesser version of acts like Mac DeMarco and Steve Lacy, or like that Zach Barrow solo album. It is just, at this point, I'm already like, man, I cannot take this seriously. But then we get to track 4, Dreaming, where the drums have kind of like this 3-2 clave rhythm groove type thing going on. You know, like, you know, that type of thing. Complete with these really corny-ass synthesized horn sounds playing over, like, the chorus that sounds like a fucking Medieval Times restaurant. And at this point, I really have to ask myself, is this a fucking joke? Like, is this entire band's existence just this elaborate prank on the music industry to see if they'll be yes men to fucking any stupid shit? Like, this is the most ridiculous cornball fucking juvenile ass. Okay. I try to live and let live with critical opinions because we can't all see eye to eye on everything, but I was listening to this and I'm like, these music blogs would call Sleep Token metal for Disney adults, but this cornball ass bullshit gets a pass from y'all? Like, what the fuck? And keep in mind, this is track 4. This album is 14 songs. At this point, I'm just like, God, like, and what makes this even more inexcusable is that I know I joke about, like, the pipeline of super heavy bands eventually gradually moving into shoegaze territory, but you can make this sort of mixed middle stage kind of style work. Like, when the band 100th went into the album Rare, where they, you know, had a particularly more heavy and intense take on, like, shoegaze, but that actually worked. In fact, I think that's where they peaked, and that's still their best album. But the overall songwriting here is so slapdash and sloppy that it just never comes together in any meaningful way. And by the time I get to the halfway point, the song Sun Shower, I was really annoyed, especially because I realized that was probably as good as the album was going to get, especially with a lot of decent drum passages in there. But the record is 45 minutes long. That was track 7. And I really did feel like I, like, 45 minutes had passed by the time I got to that halfway point. What the fuck do you mean there's 7 more songs? Spoiler alert, the back half of this album doesn't work out any better either. And I don't care if that starts any fights. I don't care if that makes me look like a contrarian. As far as I'm concerned, Turnstile feels like online music propaganda, and you cannot convince me otherwise. Like, okay, I posted this on Blue Sky the other day, because I finally realized something. The best way I could describe Turnstile's music is that this would 100% be at home in the soundtrack of a Tony Hawk video game, but not one of the classic ones. This isn't Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3. This is more the time they released a skateboard controller that barely worked. Bordering on Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5, a game that was so good, this development studio shut down shortly after it released. Can you tell I don't like this band?
Oh, really?
Let's move on from that to odd disappointment. Like, okay, I listened to this Scars on Broadway album, Addicted to the Violence, and okay, I've kind of given up on hopes of, like, ever getting peak era System of a Down in any capacity, but, like, this album is kind of shockingly bad. Like, okay, it sounds like what you would expect from a Darren Malakian project. The riffs are very much his style. You know, the songwriting is kind of trying to be, like, catchy, but also a little bit wacky in that System of a Down sort of way. The lyrics are, you know, very boisterous, attitude filled, and in your face. But at the same time, this is like, okay, how do I put this? This is kind of like the Mr. Pickles of metal albums. In that, very well known, I hate that show. But the main reason I hate Mr. Pickles is because it's what an Adult Swim show must look like to people who hate Adult Swim show. Like, if you took the biggest Adult Swim hater on the planet and told them to make a show for the network, it would look like Mr. Pickles. On the same note, this album feels like if you asked the biggest System of a Down hater on the planet what their music sounds like. And it's just a lot of try-too-hard wackiness without any of the sauce that manages to pull any of that stuff together. It lacks any kind of potency in its political commentary, and it's also kind of weirdly petty in kind of like the same way as that last Fever 333 album. Shit, there's a song on here with him whining about, oh, I dare you. Darren's like, oh, I dare you to cancel me. Go ahead and do it. I'm like, my brother in Christ, I'm pretty sure you almost did back when y'all were peak. What happened here? Oh my god. It's very flanderized is what I'm trying to say here. And now for the last lowlight I have. This is the other online influencer turned pop singer album. And I've already been consistently mean. I don't think it's going to stop on this one, but I'm going to ask the following question very sincerely. What is it that I am supposed to say about this Alex Warren album? Like, it's a modern pop record by a male singer, and it sounds like every other male pop singer does these days. It's got instrumentally a lot of light acoustic guitars and, you know, big background choir vocals, lots of stomp clap rhythms, vague tinges of folksy Americana, the basic ass song structures of gentle verses and choruses that sound big in a super generic way, but it's all non-threatening and easy on the ears. The vocal performances sound just the same from song to song. It's like, you know, not to borrow a joke from Todd in the Shadows, but it really does sound like this whole, like, thing with male pop singers where every song they do sounds like an audition for The Voice. You ever sat through an entire season of The Voice? Congratulations, you've heard this Alex Warren album. And, like, I get the lyrical theme here is about trying to pick yourself up after the emotional devastation of a heartbreak, but nothing about the songwriting or performances here really conveys the sense of true devastation or even just genuinely triumphant recovery from that kind of emotional hardship. In effect, it's an album that feels scared. An album that is scared of being even mildly challenging, threatening, or even just truly passionate about anything. It's like, again, to steal another observation from Todd in the Shadows, this guy was a part of the Hype House, you know, the influencer collective founded by the literal demons in human clothing known as Jake and Logan Paul. And it's like, I almost kind of wish that this album found a way to be super unhinged in that online influencer sort of way, because at least I would have something to talk about. At least you can riff and roast on It's Every Day, Bro, with that Disney Channel flow, but this is nothing. This is so fucking empty. It's like, Jesus Christ, like, this is like the this is like the antithesis of everything I think music is capable of. Like I like music that at least, if it's not going to be super innovative, like, I don't know, a record by the Armed, at least just some legitimate passion or something. Like, you know, now that I think about it, it's kind of weird how the male pop singers we get these days are so fucking bland, considering that, like, so many of the women that are singing in pop these days, even at their weakest, are still leagues more interesting than anything any guy is doing. Like, this guy sounds like he's so scared of being just quote-unquote canceled, whatever the fuck that means anymore. But Sabrina Carpenter will get on her knees for an album cover because she doesn't give a fuck who she pisses off. That I respect more. Ugh. Okay, that's my mean streak done. But if you're looking over this list, you'll probably notice that there's a couple of records that we skipped out on.
Yeah.
These would be, like, you know, the traditional group analysis spots, but it's just the two of us here. So we're just two bagging... What the fuck am I saying? I just invented bullshit slang out of nowhere. But look, we're doing those ones here now. And I guess it depends, like, how long we'll linger on it, because one, I don't have much to say by design. The other, we'll see. So I'm going to just bring up my thoughts on the Tyler, the Creator record, Don't Tap the Glass First. I'll put it like this. One of the most important things I think all people kind of have to learn at some point is meeting art on its level. Like, you wouldn't get mad at an Olivia Rodrigo album because it doesn't have, like, blast beats or shredding guitar solos, because that's just not her artistic priority. She makes pop music, not thrash metal. And in this case, we have Tyler, the Creator, who, you know, his previous record was this very, like, elaborate, lyrically and instrumentally nuanced project in Chromacopia, examining his own psychoses, his heartbreak, relationship to his own fame, and all that kind of stuff. But then, short notice, we get Don't Tap the Glass, an album that literally right up at the beginning straight up tells you none of that deep shit.
Yeah. It's really for bangers.
Yeah, that what this record is just some shit to throw on and enjoy yourself to while driving down on a road trip or to get a party going. You don't gotta work too hard to understand it. You just gotta, as Symbionic Titan would say, drop it, shake it, booty, quake it. And it fucking works. Like, I mean, production-wise, you get sort of the broad two modes of Tyler, with kind of a back and forth between these slick, smooth, upbeat R&B type songs like Sucka Free, with those really, really catchy bouncy grooves, or the disco dance tempos of Ring Ring Ring. And then, of course, you get the harder shit, like the only music video we have so far, Stop Playing With Me, which has, like, that really, like, driving beat with this kind of repetitious ticking gunfire sound, bragging about how he's hot shit compared to all y'all. Or even, like, the song Mominem, which is interesting because, like, I think I've said I'm very used to Tyler's production being very percussion-driven, and yet this is one of those rare, like, drumless Tyler tracks that nonetheless is fucking just sick, menacing bullshit. And I actually don't mind seeing the anime edits for this on TikTok, because, like, shit goes hard.
Yeah. And give me how I call it an anime intro track, not because of anything anime-wise, because, like, yeah, this is a short-ass track. Because, well, it would fit like the open of anime. It must be an opening to, I don't know, fucking Dun the Dawn.
There's an idea. I don't know, maybe y'all can get Tyler to guest in the next season at some point. We might talk about that next main episode. But, I mean, like I said, I don't really have much to add other than, you know, everyone involved did their thing.
So, yeah, all I gotta say is, Tal did his fucking thing on the record. Like, after everything with Chromacopia It's like, this ain't gonna be no deep shit. It's a bank attack being good. It's like what 20, what like close, like a 28 minute runtime. So we won't be here for a long time, but we go here for a good time. Am I right? And I gotta say, like, but it's also a big cold ass a fucking banger, which you got lines like, I hate light skinned niggas on my mama. I like dark skinned bitches like my mama. I like light skinned bitches like my daddy. You let that line? Not my problem. Okay. And of course, but just sugar on my tongue, which sounds like this. I want to say it sounds like a Human Error's Cabal's track, like, for written. And of course, got some smooth shit like suck. Like a pretty, like, I will say the last couple of tracks really do get me like Don't You Worry Baby, which that feature which features Master McFarlane, no no not McFarlane, McFerrin. Yes, that's the daughter of Bobby McFerrin. Yes, that one, that, you know, Don't Worry Be Happy guy. Which is really her song, because she sings the chorus, the bridge, and only verse in there. It's like, you can tell it's very explicit, like very, very, very explicit. And of course, got vocals from Yibba with "I'll Take Care of You," which got this very distinct vocals of a lot. That's something that's very similar to early German bass stuff and samples of "Cry Mob," "Knuck If You Buck." Although we wanted the drums from Cherry Bomb, from what I read, and the closer to see what it is, where it got this on like very emotional ass Tyler track, you being skeptical about falling with someone, and I know the relationship has that soulful touch that isn't having spot on. Which, yeah, it's definitely like a good, you know, a good time to spend your half hour. Just 30 minutes approximately of Tyler doing his thing. But yeah, like I said, like, it's good. Don't tap the glass. No, seriously, don't tap the glass. That's kind of annoying when you do that. Like, you do the animals, they probably bite the shit out of you.
Yeah, those fish are trying to chill out in there. You're scaring the fish. But that, of course, isn't, like, the big, you know, main event of July. Yeah. There was, of course, another. And you know what? I feel like I should let Mark take the lead on this.
Oh, yes. So, actually, know about this, well, about this podcast, we talk a lot about the infamous Drake Kendrick Lamar beef last year. It was the thing everybody was talking about. But while Kendrick tends to humiliate Drake, the both critical and commercial acclaim, who's the first to cast the first stone? That being Pusha T.
Pusha T.
But enough about Drake for now. Now, of course, yes, this is, of course, us talking about Clips. Let God sort them out. Y'all remember Clips? Y'all remember the grinding? What happened to that boy and Mr. Me Too? And of course, y'all know the story about then, you know, they split up. Malice turned a dumb mouth upon religion. Pusha T did his whole thing. Only me sending good news for Kanye West and be a president. And you know where that heads to. So yeah. So fast forward. Well, the 2025. Well, now. Well, this year. And of course, we have an album announcement. The first Clips album in 16 years since their last album. The hype was real, and okay. I wonder, is it really good, or is it what they call, is this culturally inappropriate?
God, I have been saying that to myself way too much. Yeah. It's a really funny, like, thing to just quote to yourself.
Yeah. And all you know, the first track starts with something that's a bit somber, to be honest. Yeah. The first track starts with the burst on sing, which of course they do with the loss of their parents. and how they deal with it, with, you know, pushing the news about, you know, about Mumford's wife and how fucked up it is. And he realized how, like, and it goes on how, like, you know, how, like, how much he loves her, and, you know, he's glad that she met his son, but realizing that, well, his son will not probably remember her, which now feels kind of sad. That was kind of like, oh man, that's, and then Miles fits on the death of with too close, because after mom died, then the pops died, and of course, I mean, Christmas lyrics, like how thinking that he should rap again after more hiatus, thinking like, you know, what we should do is like, and considering, I look at stuff like, you know, how like in this false community, the past, it says like, Hylos is too bored. It's like, wow, that is some deeply sad shit. Like, damn, man.
Yeah, like, between this and that Killer Mike song, Mother, just, man, rappers rapping about their dead moms, like, yeah, it just really hits you, especially considering that this is how they opened the record. Yeah, first album in, like, 15 years, and it's not like a hard rager, it's, we're sad about our dead parents.
Yeah, of course, an outro from Stevie Wonder. Yes, that's Stevie Wonder. I'm told that you're kind of like, you know, love, like, you know, like, love your mama, some father, some chest bones you have, one which is like, you see, it's like, this is definitely like a deeply sombre, moment. Like, yeah, man, this is some very really heartfelt shit.
But then, anyway, the next track is like, all right, we already got the sad shit out of the way. Let's fucking start leaving dents in the fucking concrete.
Yep.
With the song that delayed this album a year out from when it was supposed to come out, Chains and Whips.
Yep. And you hear a fucking chain in the background, because why not? Oh, yes. So, they and me give some shit. It's like, For me, for another piece of, like, repossession, too much to name and cover your necklace, about bitches you buy sections, you buy watches, I buy collections, minutes for your regression, and the more of the song, I'm like, yeah, remember when I said that Jim Jones been dissed by Freddie? Well, yep. Pusha also dissed him too.
Got him.
Especially during that, I want to say, what's that shit called? Damn, I don't know what it's called. Like, the something, open note, open something, or shit. Like, everyone is like, he was into a scam. Like, yeah, and of course, Malice was no slash on it. It was like, original make watches for presidents, just a million trap between skeletons. It's the darkest that has ever been. The diamonds will make you taste peppermint. You ain't done the snow like it's the revenant. You send orders barked down to keep shoveling with, like, yeah, okay, yeah, and, okay, yeah, and of course, the reason why this shit got delayed, because one label thought, yeah, we don't want this, like, okay, well, fuck you, we'll move another label. In comes Kendrick Lamar. I'm not the candidate to vibe with. I don't fuck with the Kumaya shit. All that talent must be gossip. I see your ass better than the cosmics. The things I see under my eyelids, custom things, murders, and sirens. Which, okay, this is different than the lyrical exercise shit that he's doing here. Even Deuce Ronsky's with the word Gemini, it is hard as fuck.
Yeah, especially with that beat. Like, honestly, this kind of sounds like it could have been in fucking Django Unchained.
Oh, yeah, some Dutchin, which, yeah, for real, fucking did this thing. Like, this, you thinking this the same for real who does shit like Happy? You really this one meal song to this, for doing beats for himself and others, like, you're like, very, very happy shit, and then from the clip, like, yeah, like that.
Yeah, like, when we get to the next track after that, POV, which has, like, this very, like, subtle, intense piano loop in the background, really the perfect bedrock alongside, like, the hard-hitting drums to just lay, like, all kinds of sick bars over the place. I will say, low-key, my favorite underrated bar on the record is just the line, "They content create, I despise that." I just really need to hear someone say that for once.
Yeah. It's basically him doing people didn't give it a warning to conscious hip hop. We push for us on flavor of the week. Modern rappers that might be popping out. We're gonna be popping out with brown hands, big streaming numbers. Because, but the thing is, they get to stay long term anxious. It's like they're big. They're big one day, then they're shit the next. Then other things have hip hop thousandaires who've been the game for a long time, but had nothing to show for it. Like basically this and what he calls the Zeus Network niggas, aka reality stars, she's in the bag. And then you got Tyler Creator. Oh, Wookie, he's back.
Man, he's all over the place.
He mentioned someone who he meets with before trying to sue him. And then he mentions that how he came to terms with the idea that basically like Jimmy Mafia said, all his heroes are cornballs, or he outgrew heroes. And yes, he's talking about that guy. I ain't gotta say his name, you should know what it is.
Yes, you absolutely should. Otherwise, are you paying any attention at all? What's wrong with you?
And then his mouth is where he's like, where he rests, where how his era hip hop used to sell dope. A new era is using it. It's like, I mean, because thinking about, back then used to rap about, being dope boys, selling dope. New era is just using it and just doing shit.
Hell yeah.
And of course, there were some little shots thrown, there were shots thrown at Drake on All Things Considered with the line, "Niggas are writing statements and they say they didn't. Gima taking you down, they hate hating. They want to show you around, but they Jay Princeton." And why I say Jay Prince, because that's the guy that Drake keeps running to because he'll be down with Houston shit, but yeah.
Yeah, like, bro, Pusha and Malice are just fucking throwing hands all over the place. Like, you're catching smoke, you're catching hands. He's probably still pissed off about that guy that cut him off in traffic 2 weeks ago and made a diss track about it. No one's safe.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. And speaking of things, he said, like, who's the first reference him? Well, of course, he missed his mother, of course, and mentioned his wife had a miscarriage, and he wants to never mention it to his son, not ever. And of course, Miles verse about how he grew up in the coke gang while showing the dynamic when it comes to father's wounds and the kids, seeing more as, basically how he. I mean, honestly, it's like, see all his friends in prison, and while he's clean of that, while he's made out, it still seems it's like you made it out, but you still got that sin of you, that sin. Also, you get the dream doing the weird actual of it, which, okay.
Yeah, you get some weird shit. But go ahead.
Yeah, and then they had this next track, basically called the title "Mike Tyson Blow to the Face."
Yeah, that is a choice of acronym.
Yep. I got that. Malice has some of the best balls in the album. Like, what? He goes and say, "All you keep on killing your feelings, man. You ain't tripping, man. You got you tricking on your women, man. I don't hit them, I just spin them, gun, and I'm grinning, and the Bugatti in a denim. As a result of my vision, react with provision. Only God knows my attention. Selling dope is religion. The hammer is position. I show niggas the difference." Yeah. Again, Malice is what 50. And he's ever better than most motherfuckers younger than us.
Yeah, he is just obviously not having it. Guy is just still, like, just at the peak of his game. Then, of course, we can't forget the other side of the equation with, Lyrics like, no confessions, questions, we can test in fireworks, I'll send a message, iridescent. Slow them down like Robitussin if you rush in. At your door when we address them, we gonna bless them. Trying to bring them, should have left them, learn my lesson. Poker faces, keep them guessing, no expression. Ice stressing on my chest and leave impression. What's a Testarossa if you don't test them?
that's some choice words. That probably got tongue-tied saying or thinking. The FO checks the name out their financial metrics. Like, you got one check called EBITDA, which stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, which, Yeah.
I gotta get my finances in check now. Yeah. Great. I can handle, them roasting me for being like a little bitch, but I don't think I could recover from being roasted for being financially irresponsible. No one's ever coming back from that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that's called FICO, asking your FICO score, which, FICO score, moving to being put on in the ladder, I feel it more because they could. It's delivered by of all people that I didn't speak of here, Stove God Cooks, aka the guy you normally find on Griselda albums. He delivered that shit with soul and with grit and soul in there. Like you can see what like oh you like that's about Stove God. Well, I mean, I'm not going to the album, but he got these. He's a good hook on there.
Hell yeah.
Also want to highlight a line there, like, Miami niggas like Big Perm because the numbers are phased on. Cubans show me nothing but love, but it comes out that every string belt just needs an Avon. Won't see but under the rug. A Friday and a Wire reference.
Nice. Yeah,
there's some heat on this. Speaking of Walker, we got another set called, Inglorious Bastards with A, which got the raw storytelling cinematic feel, which did with a long time collaborator of them. That being Abliva with the V-Up game, which now I remember, like, oh yeah, it used to be a thing, because I remember, both into, I won't say the other guy, because I remember that being a lot of like, a lot of like Pharrell related stuff, or at least Neptune related stuff. That would not just a thing, but yeah. Like I gotta say, like Ablib was doing the very bush living on the surface. Like, okay, all right, yeah.
Just really solid performance. Of course, killer lyrics all over the place. Catch me in the kitchen where the dope is, with an apron that's whiter than the Pope's is. Spread distribution wide open. Now all the smokers call him Moses. Got your bitch bent over like scoliosis. Oh, wow.
Ooh, yeah. All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's kind of amazing how this many years later, they still got so many fresh bars for just the basic concept of slinging coke.
Yeah.
Can't forget about White Glove with the solid break. I am Luigi. There's an idea. Luigi's Mansion 4, but with clips on the soundtrack.
Luigi, what's that white stuff on the floor?
I'm out of here. I can explain. It's how we see in the ghosts. We should move on.
Yeah, we should move on. Okay, so far ahead, again, another mouth burst that caught my attention, which it goes, no mistake me for the Reverend, usher the money, my confession. Oh, and I done been both Mason Bethes. I done been both in both interceptions. Now, why did I what catch that? Because the former reference to, well, Usher, Confessions, the one album, and I said I done been Mason Bethes. That's reference towards the rapper Mace. The rapper that was big in the late 90s, and then he retired from rap, and he, fought religion, which, yeah.
Yeah, this is another just like great song, like the beat on So Far Ahead, just kind of like that slow trudge with that very like heavy bass line that just kind of like swells and you know, in the mix and all. Seriously, it really is amazing just how much Pharrell winds up being the unsung MVP of this record. You almost forget that he had a whole ass Lego movie about himself.
Yeah, is that on Peacock right now? Or is it on Netflix? I don't know.
I thought it was Peacock. I thought it was the Universal thing. Don't they make, like, most of the Legos? Never mind.
Yeah, they do. I don't know. But, Anyway, because it would be the cooling tracks. The title track in, well, title track slash Shed the Leaves, which is the only song which, you know, two tracks have won. First half being Clips, doing their thing. And the other one, look at the Nas, which, wow, Nas has been a lot of these, has been featured in shit I've reviewed, which, okay.
Yeah, I guess he has been.
Yeah. I'm gonna check his pretty solid as well. I would say the Beatles channel is probably the best. And then he gets a foul track by the grace of God, which, you know, basically tells the path of both rappers, you know, been to the coke thing, managed to turn their life around, basically be bigger than ever before, and the fact they got away with so much from the shit that they done by, well. Yeah, the grace of God, which is like, and give one of a kind religion, and it's something that speaks about, but yeah.
Yeah, so just, I think Fantano said it best in the description of his review, no fucking skips. Not a single goddamn one.
Right. Nothing is skip worthy. Just from this album of all, like, yes, this is definitely worth a score of 10. This is definitely a ten record. Anyone says otherwise, it's a bitch. There.
It has been 16 years, and they sound like they have never skipped a day.
Yeah, and guess what? They do more than just stand the coke rap. Like, I mean, yes, it's coke rap, but they make interesting ways about it. They actually come up with shit about it. And yeah, and I guess about, you know, various feuds, mostly pushes, and then the vulnerability, looking back at their lives. Again, I know I said this a lot of times before, but I will keep repeating it. They are in their late 40s, early 50s. Matter of fact, most of the albums I talked about are rappers in their late 40s or 50s. Hell, I think it's like Risk Case. I think Slick Rick is 60. And guess what? They make better albums out there than younger motherfuckers out there doing mostly horse shit. Like, this is after something and this cast all love. Like, this is why July was a good fucking month for hip hop. Whether it be mainstream, whether it be underground, it is a fantastic month for it. Sure, lesser albums garner more success, but I don't think nobody's talking about that album and how good that is. But people talking about this album and how good it is. This left the mark, and sure, music industry was trying to bury it because of course they are, but people remember this shit. There's something people will know by the end of the year. People say this will be the favorite album of this year. I guarantee you that this will be on many lists, even our lists, but especially our lists. Those will be on my list.
Yeah, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that. I mean, obviously, this is very much going to be in the running. At the very least, maybe this can light a fire under the ass of younger MCs who are looking to really flex their shit. Like, you're really going to get, Like, the veterans are outclassing the newbies. Maybe this will get someone to step their game up.
Yeah. And who knows? Who knows? I smell Grammys. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, make a sign with Kendrick, Tyler, maybe. Maybe twice, I don't know. And Clips, because they've been nominated for Grammys plenty of time. Well, Pusha T has, but it could look. I'm saying I keep my eye on that shit. In other words, don't fuck this up Grammys. At least on the rap category.
We can only hope. But yeah, that about brings us to the end here. Thank you for listening to all of our thoughts on these records. Of course, as always, there will be a playlist to our favorite suggestions in the description of this episode. You know where to find us. Check the description stuff down below, SorrowResolution.com. Follow us at SorrowResolution on Blue Sky. All that good business. We'll, of course, be back next month with the album roundup for August, as well as the usual weekly shenanigans. So, again, thank you for listening, and until next time, peace.
I found the Oreos. Mine now.
You get back here! You motherfucker! God damn it. Walmart doesn't even open this late.